Hello and welcome to Lather Talk, a wet shaving podcast. I'm your host, John, aka Lather Hog, and with me is Gerard, aka Hey Gerard Shaves. And I'd like to welcome our guest for today's episode, the creator of Sharpologist.com, Mark Harrow, aka Mantic59. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mark.
Hey, John, thanks for having me.
So, if you had to choose your desert island shave, what gear would you choose and why?
Oh boy, the desert island shave. It changes on a semi-regular basis as products come on and leave the market, of course. And I've been doing this for 15 odd years, so it's gone through a number of permutations. But right now, I would say that a razor would be my one blade Genesis. The brush would be probably the new PAA Peregrino synthetic. And for a shaving cream and aftershave, actually, I probably go back to Castle Forbes Limes, which I've always really liked. It's very strongly scented for me. It's like getting hit in the face with a key lime pie. It's just something I have never gotten tired of.
Do they have a matching? I've only used a sample of that, of the Castle Forbes Lime, actually, as well. I thought it was great. But as far as post-shave, what does Castle Forbes like offer?
They do have an excellent A balm.
So you would go balm, not as opposed to a splash or something like that?
I guess it would depend on where the desert island was. I'm way more of a balm type person than a splash type person anyway. I'm never have been a big fan of alcohol-based splashes. There are a few low or no alcohol splashes out there. One I can think of that I like is Lucky Tiger, but I generally prefer balms.
I feel like that's definitely the trend right now as far, and I know kind of like the large commercial companies versus kind of, you know, the trends and fads of like the artisan scene aren't always the same, but I do feel like on the artisan side, non-alcohol splashes and just options, even just more balms, I think are often out of necessity. Alcohol, I've heard, is really hard to get right now because of, all the hand washes and whatnot. I'm curious, during this, you know, period of COVID-19, what are some of your observations as far as kind of changes to the industry?
Yeah, I've seen a little of that. The artisan crowd is under a challenge right now because it is difficult to get both hardware and software from China. The hardware makers getting razors or blades, the software makers getting ingredients, particularly alcohol, has become more of a challenge. So we're seeing some pressure on inventory where they just don't have enough to go around. Of course, prices are going up a little bit. Surprised, not as much as I was expecting, but they are going up. And some artisans are having to kind of pivot around and change the way they work. For example, Barrister and Mann just came out with their first balms after using splashes for a very long time. Now, of course, Will at Barrister and Mann says they had been planning it for a long time, and I'm sure he has, but I'm sure the COVID issue has kind of accelerated his schedule for things like that.
And have you had a chance to use the Barrister and Mann balm?
I have, and it's very good, particularly the Terror balm, which has the synthetic menthol. Boy, that's a face freezer.
Have you come across, there are a few folks who are pretty much immune to the synthetic menthol, because I know it's still fairly new as far as showing up in products, but I have a buddy that I think, have you seen the Terror Aid drops? So it's just the cooling agent isolated in a dropper format, and he put 40 drops into his lather in the shaving bowl, And he's like, I feel a mild tingle, but not, but
oh
not like
gosh.
Cooling. Yeah.
Oof.
And I reached out to Will. I was like, hey, have you heard this happen before? He's like, yes. Like, it's a small handful, but yes, there are definitely folks who don't, you know, aren't getting a cooling sensation. They might get, a mild tingle is what they get at most. So I don't know.
I had not heard of that before.
I'm sure we'll hear kind of like more as more people try it, because it's still, you know, I think, like you mentioned, terror, the soap, terror in the balm, or just I love the drops myself. And I've always like cooling, but I thought menthol sometimes in the aftershave in particular, when it's too much, it really it gets in the way of whatever scent you're trying to enjoy.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm personally a big fan, but I'm kind of curious to see if enough people aren't getting the benefits of it, you know, then I wonder if we'll see another product get developed.
And you also have to remember, I'm in Texas, and
yes,
these days it's 100 degrees, so
yes,
cooling products are nice this time of year.
Well, since we talked a little bit about kind of, I mean, I can't believe it's been 15 years that you've been here. So I know there's some questions that were kind of geared in that way, where it's like, kind of like what changes you've seen. So that's I'm really looking forward to, to what you have to say about some of these. But let's start with since you started Sharpologist, what are some of the milestones that stood out to you or were surprised by in the world of traditional shaving?
Actually, I've been thinking about that lately, and even though I started Sharpologist in 2011, I do want to go back a little bit before that and mentioned a couple things that I think were real paradigm shifts even before then. One is in 2005, Corey Greenberg, who was the tech editor for the Today Show, did a segment on the weekend Today Show about traditional shaving. And the few vendors that were around in those days reported selling a year's worth of products within a couple weeks of that that segment. So it really kind of jump-started the niche in the beginning. And then I think something else that was kind of influential was ProRasso being available in Target for a while. This was around 2006, 2007.
Really? I never knew about that. I mean, this is yes. Obviously before I ever
regular Parasso oh. Green in the tube, the
yeah.
Shave cream, and the ProRasso boar hair brush were oh, available wow. in Target for a year or so, and unfortunately they quit carrying it. But that was another big deal in the niche when that happened. A little later, I made myself some notes actually about this. Vanderhagen, you know, they came about, they started in 2001 with some very modest shave soaps. But around 2015, thereabouts, they came out with their luxury shave soap, which compares favorably with a fair chunk of the artisan crowd when it came out, and it was available at your local Walgreens, Walmart, things like that. It was a really amazing thing to see. Vanderhagen has since been sold to United Beauty out of Chicago. Vanderhagen was actually a Texas company originally, and United Beauty has kind of changed direction with Vanderhagen. You don't see as much of their stuff around as you used to, at least I don't around here. But one thing I will give them is you can actually still find a Vanderhagen branded double-edged twist open razor at a lot of outlets, you know, Walgreens, Walmarts, that kind of thing. And give them credit, hey, at least it's available. It may not be the best thing in the world, but if you want to try traditional shaving, have an instant gratification, if you will, by picking something up off the shelf, there you go. Couple other things. I think Mule with their first synthetic brush in around 2012 or so, kind of jump-started the whole synthetic brush movement, where before then, the synthetic fiber quality wasn't very good. Nowadays, it's exploded, and you can get some amazing synthetic brushes. In fact, I think I mentioned earlier the PAA Peregrino brush just amazes me every time I use it. It's really the first brush that I've used that compares favorably with an upper end Badger brush. And then Declaration Grooming in 2016, I was actually their first customer when it was L&L Grooming.
Yep.
And they were, I think, one of the very first ones to use some exotic tallows in their shave soaps and kind of jump-started that portion of the artisan crowd as well. Although I do want to give credit again to PAA for probably about 5 years before that. And I know PAA is kind of controversial with some people, but bear with me here, that their first products with kokum butter and some other ingredients that weren't used before then was a big shift in the artisan ingredient crowd as well. So those are some of the things that I think have made a real change to the niche over the past few years.
So I guess a few things I thought of for the different milestones that you shared. So I'm curious, because I'm not as familiar with what Mule did with the synthetics, but would you say, like, when did Plisson, those brushes, I know maybe because I was starting to get to the YouTube side of traditional shaving, I know that Plisson, especially from IMCDB and a few others, really loved that brush. Was that after what Mule?
Probably about 5 years. Three or 4 years after Mule. Now, you have to remember the Plisson synthetic is much less expensive than the Mule brush. So Plisson was probably the first one to have a decent synthetic brush for a decent price.
And that Plisson brush, I mean, compared to like 2020 prices, right? Wasn't it still like around $50?
Yes.
So that's kind of like, it's almost now like ludicrous to think of like a synthetic brush for $50, but that's how far we've come in that, in that short time.
That's true.
I think it's kind of, I think Declaration was already around for a bit. I didn't try the products for a little bit just in my exploration of the artisan scene, but yeah, I mean, their first soap, correct me if I'm wrong, was it that Bison tallow?
Their first, I don't think their very first soap was Bison, but it came out very shortly after.
I see.
They changed name from L&L Grooming to Declaration Grooming. And I think when they changed the name is when they first did the Bison, but don't quote me on that. I'm not sure.
Man, the brush thing, yeah. I think especially if you're following or having seen the evolution of the synthetic brushes, that must have been quite the doozy.
It's really amazing compared to what was available just a few years ago to what is available now. Some of the fibers are just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as brushes that you regularly use, do you stick with synthetic or like what's the ratio of brushes you use?
It's only been in the last couple of months that I've used synthetics much more often. My favorite brushes before that were the WSP Badger and Sterling's Badger, and even the Edwin Jagger Badger. The Super Badgers, the upgraded Badger quality brushes, is what I had been using, just basically because I wasn't satisfied with anything else until just very recently, the past couple of months.
And what's your opinion on, it's British or like European, like some of the longstanding brands like Simpson and the other brushes? Do you think, like where does that rank, I guess, as far as your experience with the other brushes that you've used?
Quite frankly, I think the established English brands have kind of been left in the by the roadside, except maybe very, very recently, within really the past couple of weeks, I believe Simpson has come out with a Trafalgar line of synthetic brushes. But really and truly, Simpson particularly, Edwin Jagger to some extent, Shave Mac, the established names have sort of taken a back seat to the artisans that are cranking out unbelievable shave brushes for very low prices.
Yeah, that was my feeling too. And even that whole explosion, right? Like there's the explosion of artists and soap makers, but I feel like monthly there are new brush turners. And before we started recording, we're talking a little bit just about social media, Instagram being such a visual medium. Man, that's like, you know, if you get a customer posting a brush they bought from you, that's just free advertisement right there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Have you dipped your toes in the world of artists and brush makers at all?
Actually, I have in a couple different ways. I do have a few artisan brushes. I tend to shy away from some of the artisans simply because for myself, speaking strictly for myself, a lot of the price is fancy handles and I just don't see it for myself. I'm more of a rubber meets the road kind of guy where I want to get the performance and the performance comes from the knot versus the handle. That being said, I have been in a couple of initial talks with some brush makers about making a very specific handled brush for sharpologists.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah, that may be coming down the line here later this year.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit. And prior to our talking today, I did reach out to listeners of the podcast to just get some questions. So if you don't mind, I'm going to fire some of those questions at you.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so the first question I have here is from Shave326. And he asks, why no Shave the Day videos? We could probably learn a ton from a vlog-style video from Mantic59.
I've resisted Shave of the Day videos simply because there are so many other people doing them. I think I would just get lost in the noise. I do plan on doing more videos in the coming months, but again, they'll be mostly tutorial types like I always do and not so many of the Shave of the Day kinds of things. I do post Shave of the Days occasionally on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. But I've kind of avoided doing the videos. Maybe if there's enough people asking, okay, send me an email at mantic59@sharpologist.com and let me know if you'd be interested in happy doing Shave of the Day videos. Maybe I will.
All right, listeners. So Mark has invited that upon himself. If you want to see Shave of the Day videos, and Shave326, this includes you, be sure to shoot him an email. Mark, just share the email, and we'll be sure to include the email address and other links in the show notes. So thanks for answering that one, Mark. Second question for you comes from HD Shaves, and he asks, what is your favorite artisan soap released in this past year?
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. There have just been so many really good artisan soaps. It's really tough to give just one. Some of the PAA soaps I really enjoy.
Feel free to list a few.
Yeah, I'm
list a few. We'll narrow it down.
Washing over me, Barristan Man, Katie's Bubbles. Katie, I don't know if they're still doing it. I'm working off an old puck right now, but he used to have a soap called Waterliptus. It's a combination of watermelon and eucalyptus. It's a late summer, early fall kind of vibe that is perfect right now, and I've been using it. Flowers in the Dark, which is a deep lavender from, I think it's Dr. John's.
Yes.
I've been using that. Captain's Choice has a couple out that are relatively new. Nor'easter, I think, is one that I enjoy. Boy, it's just so tough picking just a few because there are just so many really good artisan soaps out there. It's hard. What's the other one? Annie Spartacus is another one I enjoy.
Okay. Well, the one other user submitted question, kind of maybe you can, it overlaps with the previous question, and user Senya Shade asks, just what is your current favorite shave soap and aftershave?
Shave soap. I would have to say right this minute, because of the weather, it's a toss-up between Barrister and Man Terror and PAA Peppermint, because they're both nice, cooling, excellent performing products, and they're great for the hot weather.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
So, I was talking with John kind of, you know, prior to everything going on, specifically Sharpologists in general, and how has your audience changed from like when you started to now? Do you feel like your content is directed towards a certain member of the community in general or a certain like audience demographic in general? And yeah, just kind of your ideas and thoughts on that.
Sure. Actually, surprisingly to me, there has not been a whole lot of change in the demographics of Sharpologists since it started. I routinely do a questionnaire or a survey on my email list about how people are doing, what's going on, what they would like to see. And I get basically the same answers every year. So it's surprisingly stable. There's a element of the hardcore shave nerd, which is looking for the news and information of artisans and the niche, if you will. Then there's another group that is more interested in tutorials, learning how to shave, that kind of thing. And then there is another smaller niche that is interested in not only that subject, but also a slightly broader area of classic or traditional men's grooming. Not the trendy stuff, but like, for example, pomades or hair products that have a history to them, not the newest, latest, and greatest, which I occasionally do reviews of, and the response is generally, yeah, okay, thanks. But if I do something that has a more traditional bent or from a traditional company, from, say, for example, Florists or
Marie's,
to Truefit, those types of places, yeah, there's a lot more interest. So I have tried to broaden Sharpologist over the past couple of years, just to keep it fresh and interesting. But there is that hardcore element that is really just interested in the shave nerd stuff.
As far as like the search engine optimization or SEO when it comes to like Sharpologists, right? Is there anything that you do? Like if I wanted to type in traditional shaving, how does Sharpologist fit in, like where you're hoping on being that first five links on Google or
right.
or wherever?
I actually try to not concentrate on the broader SEO keywords like shaving or wet shaving or traditional shaving. I'll try to focus a little more on things like what is the best double-edged razor or what is the best shave cream, best aftershave, that kind of thing, simply because it's easier to rank for. And then as people find the site, they see all these other things as well. And that gets them hooked in and interested. I do want to eventually get more into a, I'm thinking of getting into more of a online class kind of thing, maybe this fall. And, you know, how to shave with a straight razor, how to shave with a double-edged razor. And that might kind of tighten up my SEO a little bit for those keywords as well. But at the moment, I don't try and compete with the Gillette's, the P&G SEO division. I'm sure they have 20 people, or even West Coast Shavings or some of the larger vendors that have SEO pretty much locked up in a lot of ways.
Yeah, like I think it's always interesting, you know, especially since you started Sharpologist from the ground up, like how is it for kind of a one-man operation compared to a lot of the bigger outfits, you know, with full marketing departments and PR and all that stuff. So
I do have some automated programs that help me. Of course, I'm like many other websites, I'm running WordPress behind the scenes, and they have hooks and connections to all sorts of different things. I have a SEO plugin on the website that helps me target keywords and makes sure Google knows my site search and knows about my site map, and make sure it has keywords and things like that that it can send over to the search engines. And that's what I'm having to rely on a lot rather than try and hire a staff. But it works reasonably well.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, and I can't say it exactly, but I know that if I've Googled something, at least 50% of the time, something from Sharpologist, an article from Sharpologist will pop up. And it's usually because I've asked for something specific.
Right.
You know, whether it's just like, what's the best, you know, double-edged blade, or what's the best single-edged blade, or something like that, that you'll have done an article, or there'll be some featured article on there that'll directly link me to you.
So, yeah, it's a lot easier to get exposure that way than a more general keyword.
I'm curious, how come like you're not at the helm of the podcast or like a host co-host scenario? Because obviously, I think you were invested in that medium early on, to obviously to include it in the network. But just curious, you have a more behind the scenes role, do you not?
Right. To be honest with you, I just didn't have the time to do website and a podcast and even try and do videos. You know, I'm not hardly doing any videos now. The vast majority of my work time goes into the website, but I'm hoping to change that here later this year and do some more videos. But originally I was approached to see if I wouldn't mind hosting a podcast. And at the time I didn't have time to do one myself. So I said, sure, I'll do the behind the scenes stuff, and you give me the content, and we'll go on with that. And actually, it's worked out really well. Joe Borelli gives me a file every couple of weeks. I use my video editor in the audio mode to insert music and edit any problems that may be on the website, on the podcast, on the recording. And there's usually very few. And then I upload it to my distribution channel and they take care of the rest. So it's a low effort. I don't want to say low effort, low time consuming thing for me. I have done a couple podcasts on my own when Joe didn't have the time to do one and I needed to keep a schedule. But I really rely on Joe for what he does.
It's funny because I feel like nowadays, you know, you have the, you know, if we're just going to kind of talk about just media and whatnot, there's a very big prosumer market, you know, and things like that, where just amateur content is so good and so crisp. And you know, you see content on YouTube, you hear podcasts and stuff like that, and people are just doing it with either free software or very, you know, basic, you know, cameras and stuff like that. And it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it really is amazing. When I first started doing videos in 2004, the YouTube format, I believe, was 360p.
Yep.
And even went down to 240p for low resolution. And I actually still have some of those videos up on my channel. And I look at them and kind of close my eyes to that. I guess I really need to redo some of those videos in, at the very least, 1080p or maybe.
No, don't do them over. Like, leave them up on there. It's like, you see the journey, you know, like,
okay.
So
okay.
Like, I watch a lot of YouTube, you know, and things like that, you know, as far as, it's one of my most, you know, use content, you know, when I look at content. And there's a tech YouTuber that I watch, and he started when he was in high school. Like, he was like 14 or 15 years old, and now he's like 25. And
Oh, so wow.
You see him, like, you know, buying something like on just a regular webcam on something, no microphone, just the onboard microphone. And you can see the journey. And so I think there's something, nice about, like, being able to look back at, this was the best that you could do, you know, like, this is what you had to do with what you had.
There's shaving nostalgia. So I guess there's also video nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Sure. You know, but don't get me wrong. I don't wish that I had one of, like, the JVC, you know, camcorders from the 80s or anything like that, you know, to do our content, you know, that would be, oh man, that would be terrible.
One of the biggest things I had to relearn when I got into video was nonlinear editing, because when I was in broadcasting, it was tape and you did everything in a linear sort of way. Now there's video files instead of videotape, and you can do some really amazing things.
Yeah, that must be crazy, that shift. Even how you plan, right? Like what shots you need and whatever. Rather, it doesn't matter so much now in the digital age, right? You can always go back and...
I mean, I feel like we couldn't do this just 5 years ago.
No, probably
no.
Not.
You know, like it's just crazy how recent and how is content going to be just 5 years from now? You know what I mean? Like... I think Zoom can do up to 25 people or something like that. I know some of the other chat clients can, and it's just going to be wild. And everyone's going to have like 4K cameras, and
yep,
it's going to just like look so crisp and fantastic.
That's assuming you have the bandwidth to do it with.
Mark, we talked a little bit about kind of obviously the different communities, right? And a different mm-hmm. medium. And I'm just curious for you, I mean, Sharpologist itself is, you know, it's a website, it's a platform in and of itself, but I guess outside of that, would you say there's one community, or, you know, where kind of, which communities I receive, I guess, more of your time?
Of the social media sites, for me, believe it or not, it's Twitter, because I'm pretty sure I've been there the longest. I have the most number of followers on Twitter. Sharpologist on Facebook is the number of followers is a fraction of Twitter. And of course, Facebook screws up the timeline anyway to take away views from pages or users that don't pay to boost the postings. So I don't get a lot from Facebook as far as comments are concerned. It's really Twitter and then maybe Instagram. Funny enough, though, as far as actual referrals, web referrals to the website, Facebook is on top there. So there aren't very many comments, but more referrals. And then another significant portion of referrals is Reddit.
I read your AMA, but how long ago? At least a year ago.
About a year ago, yeah. A year and a half.
Yeah, and I was going through there. So, yeah, I've been on Reddit in general longer than I've been on the wet shaving subreddit or Wicked Edge or any of the other sub-communities, you know, like on there. So, and then, yeah, I got brought into Facebook primarily just for like small groups, but I can't say that I'm very active in some of the other groups over there. But it just seems like, I don't want to say it's like back in high school when you just had your little cliques, depending on like who it is, but that's really what it is.
Yes. It's very fragmentized and it's kind of drama. And I intentionally kind of shy away from it. I've got enough drama in real life. I don't need it in online too.
I think that's something we can all agree on.
Yes. Less drama is good. As far as the wet shaving aspect of your life goes, do you consider yourself like a hobbyist, enthusiast? Like what are the words that you use?
I like to use the word advocate myself.
Okay.
You know, yes, I'm a hobbyist. Yes, I make a living at this now since I took Sharpologist full time in 2015. That is my job. And I just try and cast a net, if you will, to try and bring people in to initially just shave better. There's so many people that just flat out don't know how to shave, even with consumer goods, you know, your basic Gillette Fusion and can of Foamy. And then they wonder why they're getting lousy shaves. Well, I can tell them how to get a better shave, no matter what they're using. And once they realize that they have some technique that they need to work on, then they get interested in the hardware and the other aspects of the niche. So I basically like to think of myself as an advocate.
Well, speaking of advocacy, as far as growing the community, or maybe that's not the right way to say it, but growing people, you know, trying traditional shaving and wet shaving, what are your thoughts about as far as kind of opening it up and trying to pull in more women?
Funny you should mention that, because I've had several conversations with women shavers and some acquaintances of my wife's that say, hey, what about stuff for us? And I'm actually working on doing more articles and even some videos about women shaving here upcoming soon. After years of trying to convince her, my wife is finally agreed to be the leg model for a leg shaving video. And I'm getting some other women shavers lined up to do articles on Sharpologist. So that is coming.
Oh, awesome. And your thoughts as far as like, is that really like the huge untapped group to really kind of bolster our numbers?
No, I don't think so. I think and I use this in the nicest possible term, but the shave nerd has kind of, the numbers have kind of plateaued over the last couple of years, that the ones that really get into the deep dive stuff. But there's still quite a bit of people that are trying to just find a better way or a different way than they're shaving now, or a less expensive way, particularly with COVID going on and people losing their jobs and they need to find ways to save money as best they can. There are certainly ways to shave more cheaply with traditional products or the commercial products. And I've actually done a few articles along those lines recently on Sharpologist as well. And again, it's kind of like advocating in better shaving in general. And I have to maybe do some additional things more than I've done now for things like getting on some other mainstream websites to do maybe a guest post on traditional shaving, classic shaving, than what people are used to seeing now.
Yeah, Mark, like John and I were talking about this actually in our first episode back November. You know, it was when The Heritage came out, when Gillette kind of like slow, like low key just threw this thing on Amazon, and everyone's like, what is, are we all seeing this, you know, at the same time? And for me, I was just thinking like, I mean, it's smart, you know, they put out a product out there regardless of whether, where it was made, you know, how it was made, you know, materials and all that. Gillette put out a double-edged safety razor and they put it out on Amazon and it sold out, you know, quickly, the first batch. And then the second batch, you know, like has been on there. And then this year with the King C Gillette, you know, in Walgreens and things like that, I'm just like, the first things first is they don't, I told John this, I said, they don't have to do this. Like they're not, they are still making tons of money, you know, like, so like for, in my head, I'm just like, are they wanting to, you know, entice some of the people who have, you know, gone the traditional shaving route? And I don't know. You know, I understand that like you've done some work with Gillette, but like, I don't know like how long it's been and whatnot, but where do you see the big names, say in the next few years, as far as the hobby goes?
I see a increased perception by the big companies that traditional shaving has a place. I think that they're not as interested in attracting the niche we're in as they are kind of reclaiming the mass market for people that have looked at other things. Gillette Skin Guard, for example, is a cartridge with only two blades and they're spaced too far apart for the hysteresis effect, so you don't get that lift and pull. And it's been very well received for the people that get ingrown hairs and razor bumps and things like that. The King C Gillette, I think, is a offshoot from the a lower cost offshoot, I might add, from the Heritage razor, which they considered as sort of a test. Is this going to work? I'm almost positive you will see more of that kind of thing from both Gillette and Schick. I think you will see sort of the smaller players get more into that as well. And I think there's going to be in the next year or two kind of a real resurgence of availability. I don't think they're going to expect too much in the way of sales or profitability right now. I think they're trying to get those shavers back to the brand rather than back to a specific razor.
So I shouldn't be hoping for the 2020 Schick Krona or the 2020 a new injector razor from Schick or anything like that?
Actually, you might see a double-edged razor from Schick. You might see it. You will almost certainly see alternative razors from the smaller manufacturers. I think the success of the supply injector will not be lost on some people. I think the gem blade has some real potential for a real resurgence. With COVID, everything's up in the air now, so time will tell. Things may be delayed. That's why I say maybe in the next year or so before anything happens, because we've got to get out of the whole COVID issue first.
I was talking with John. I just said, Gillette, if Gillette just engineered a new, like, three-piece, you know, safety razor, if they made it stainless steel, charge like $150 or something, you know, like make it profitable for them, but, you know, make it like a semi-premium product, man, I think it'd sell like hotcakes, you know?
Yeah, you know, I don't know about that, because the logical outlet for that would not be their normal mass market outlets, but probably something more in terms of Art of Shaving. And P&G wants to shed themselves of Art of Shaving. So yeah. I don't know where that would go.
So we can hope.
Or one can hope. P&G, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, one can hope. So
perhaps a holiday time release, Gerard.
It's okay. I mean, honestly, like, if they even released just the Heritage again with just a different handle and a different case, you know, I'd be fine with that. Or if they refresh the tech.
Any variant of the tech. Yeah.
You know? Even if it was like a zinc alloy or something like that, just something small and, you know, relatively inexpensive to make, but that, you know, can give them a nice little boost, you know, in the market for market share. Why not?
I think if Gillette took the heritage, the existing heritage, and etched the name Gillette on top, and gave it a date code on the bottom, I think that would be much more interesting to the collector and to the shave nerd. It'd be interesting to see where they would go from there.
That would be interesting. You know, yeah, that would be interesting already, because people, I know I did, because I have a birth year super adjustable Black Beauty. And I mean, I looked for that, you know, I looked for mine. And so, like, I have it. And yeah, no, definitely. And actually, I did the same with my father-in-law. I got him a birth year super speed. So that would be really interesting, because I know if they did something like that, say this year, I would buy one for my son. I'd be like, all right, I got a birth year razor for you. I think the only one doing birth years or date codes is Rex.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
So that's my option, you know.
What are some of the plans that you can share for Sharpologists coming up this fall?
As I kind of mentioned earlier, I do have a couple things that I'm working on. I'm hoping to do it by this fall. I'm not sure it will, but I'm working on an idea for a custom shave brush with a very specific handle shape for a very specific reason. I can't say much more about that right now because I'm still talking with people about it. I'm also working on an idea for online courses, one for double-edged razors and one for straight razors, and particularly the straight razor course, how to learn the straight razor reasonably quickly and efficiently without a whole lot of bloodshed, because that's what happens to most people when they start learning a straight razor. I know it happened to me that way, so.
John and I started this year our straight razor adventure in a bit. So yeah.
And I also want to get back kind of back to my roots and get back into more just general YouTube videos, general tutorials and things like that, and maybe even Shave of the Days if there's enough interest.
I think about it, right? And you know, people who, content creators who put out really like, you know, shade of the day videos, like, man, like they're doing it such a service, because to be honest, like it's like almost impossible to keep up with it every single day. But if there's something that you're interested in, you know, a product that's out there, you can almost be guaranteed that someone will have put that video out, you know, the week it's been released, or, you know, within a couple of days of it, you know, it being released. And so it's just nice to, it's nice to have that, just have that kind of content available so quickly for people.
Well, I did just want to open it up for you, Mark, that as we're winding down, is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners that we haven't covered already? Any plugs or shout outs that you'd like to give?
Of course, sharpolish.com, where your father didn't teach you about shaving. And I think everybody who's watching this already knows my outlets. So
Mantic 59 everywhere.
Yeah, pretty much. You can either Mantic 59 or Sharpologist on just about any social channel you care to think of. And if you have a question, reach out. I'm always available for questions and help if you need some help. I do it almost literally every day on emails or messages that come in through the website. Hey, I'm having problems with X, you know, I'm having problems with my neck or something like that. And I'll point them in the right direction and hopefully get them a better shave.
You're fighting the good fight, Mark.
Yeah.
Truly, truly a wet shaving advocate. Well, we'd like to thank you so much, Mark, for joining us on Lather Talk today. Again, you can find all the relevant links. If you don't know them, we'll have them, Sharpologist and Mantic 59, all those links in the show notes. So, of course, we'd like to thank you, the listener, for tuning to the podcast. And we appreciate your time and support on the show and hope to catch you all next time. Take care.